Really quick, before we jump into today's episode, I want to tell you about the new Leadership Accelerator workshops from Better Everyday Studios. Twice a month, I host up to 25 business leaders just like you to learn about and practice one key skill for being a better leader. We cover topics like building trust, giving feedback, setting goals, and more. These sessions are only 30 minutes long, so there is no fluff at all, just actionable takeaways. To sign up, use the link in the episode description below or go to betteverydaystudios.com/accelerator. That's betteverydaystudios.com/accelerator. I look forward to seeing you there. Now let's get into the episode.
I do like to break out competency models into leadership level, right? And it's not that, you know, it's not that leaders need different skills per se. It's just senior leaders need more of a strategic high level focus, whereas the frontline leader needs something a little bit more interpersonal. And also they're newer to the role, they need new skills. So I really do like to talk to the people in the organization and be like, what do you wish you would have known? What would have made your life 100 times easier in that first 6 months? And they, you know, usually you get a lot of similar responses. When you present it to somebody and their eyes glaze over because they're overwhelmed, that's too much, right? Just pull back, give up, start over.
Hello and welcome to the Leadership Launchpad, where we help technical managers improve themselves, their teams, and their organizations. On this show, I talk with industry leaders, coaches, authors, and experts to help give you actionable insights to improve your own performance and the performance of those around you. Our guest today is Joel Taylor. Joel and I met several months ago when speaking to his local Association for Talent Development chapter. He organized the presentation and even sent me a great gift afterwards. Recently, Joel has been working on the task of developing leadership competencies for new managers and making sure those competencies are tied to the company's culture and values. Having been a part of exercises like this in the past, I can appreciate just how big of a task this is. In this episode, you can expect to learn when you as a new manager should think about saying no, why it is okay to not have all the answers, how to use the 6-box model to improve team performance, why leadership competencies must be defined through company culture, and so much more. Before we get into that, I do want to remind any new listeners to make sure you subscribe so you never miss a future episode. If you are already subscribed, then I humbly ask that you share this show with at least one other person, because that, after all, is how we grow. I can't tell you how much it means to me. With that, let's get into the discussion with Joel Taylor. Joel, welcome to the Leadership Launchpad. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks, Matt. Really appreciate the time to come talk with you.
Absolutely. I'm so excited you managed to find time. We've known each other for quite a while. You sent me a very nice gift after I spoke at a ATD chapter meeting that you had hosted. And then we got to finally connect in person at ATD International recently. So I'm really excited that we're able to continue the discussion.
Absolutely. That was awesome to connect at ATD. Really enjoyed that event. How'd you like it?
Oh yeah, I thought it was awesome. It's always the best thing I find about conferences, especially, this is probably true in any field, but I think it's especially true for something like learning and development, is where very often we are kind of on our own little islands in companies. There's maybe one of us or three of us, or there's just not that many of us unless you're like a Fortune 100 company. And so meanwhile, nobody else around you has any idea what you do. And so conferences like ATD are, it's kind of like our Comic-Con, right? Where it's like you get a bunch of nerds together to like talk about the nerdy stuff that you all love and nobody else understands. I don't know if you find it that way at all.
Oh, it's so accurate, right? All of a sudden we have these people that understand us.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so great because that's kind of what this podcast is about too. We're talking about something that it can be kind of a nerdy topic. It definitely applies to everybody. But, you know, especially for these last few episodes, we really focus, hence the name, on leadership development. And when you and I got reconnected at ATD, I really wanted to make sure to have you on because you were in the process of kind of building up a program of helping people transition into the manager role. And I think that's really critical. That at Better Video Studios, that's the thing that we focus on because, you know, there's lots of focus on high-level leaders, mid-level managers. But honestly, in my opinion, the biggest point of friction in companies that I have seen most common is you take that technical person, that person who's technically excellent, they're a top individual contributor. That's why they're getting promoted. And you make them a manager. And they were great at the old thing, but they don't have any of the people skills. They've never, which is fine. It's not their fault. They've never done it before. What are some of the biggest challenges that you've seen when people are transitioning into their first people manager role?
Well, like you said, these are those individual contributors that were high performers, right? And yeah. They have all the intentions of going into these roles and changing how it's run. Right? Like they're like, I am going to take this team to the next level. They come in with the best of intentions.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the, you know, 30 standing email invites for the week come in and
their inbox.
Yeah. And all of a sudden this overwhelm happens because now they have these new cross team relationships that they need to build. Mm-hmm. And actually their team members are the ones who end up, you know, it's not that they're forgotten. It's just they're like, oh my goodness, I don't know where to find the time. And that overwhelm just happens, right? Mm. And then, you know, and some of these leaders, all of a sudden, that's when they just kind of get in this freeze.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think that's one of the biggest challenges. And I think it's unfortunate because if we had prepared them a little bit more before, you know, we put leaders into these new roles, you know, maybe they'd have that time management skills or, you know, knowing how to set meetings to coach individuals.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that the other big issue I've seen that new leaders come in and they feel like they have to have all the answers. They feel like they're not going to look like they know what they're doing if they don't have all the answers. And that's really unfortunate as well, because, you know, that's not how we define a leader. They're not the wise and all knowing, right? That's why we have all these extremely talented team members working for us.
Yeah, there's. I want to dig into both of those things because I think they're both so important. First, going back to that time management piece, it's so interesting that you said that because I was at a networking dinner a few weeks ago, and the question, it was kind of a, you know, an icebreaker exercise where they asked everybody, what's the leadership quality that you admire most? And I thought back to, there's one leader in particular that pops into my mind from early in my career who I always admire. And the one trait I love the most is that he always had time. And so from a leadership trait that I really admire is when the leader has time. I don't know how he did it. I know the workload that he had, but he had some kind of ability to always make it seem like, you know, his door was always open. He always had time to chat with you. And when you were with him, it didn't feel like you were keeping him from anything else. On that time management piece, let's get, you know, a couple times it here. I think we can kind of try to dip kind of tactically, because I think you're totally right. New manager shows up and it's like, boom, their inbox explodes. And it's just like, oh my gosh, what do I do? What have you seen be successful with folks of how to help people reframe their thinking so that they either don't get overwhelmed or are able to manage those meetings in a slightly better way?
I feel like there's definitely a mentoring piece in this, right? Mm. I feel like we also have all these talented individuals who have been doing this for years, and they probably remember that moment. They probably remember exactly that moment where they went, oh no, this just happened to me. And, you know, they need that person who can relate to it and also say, it's going to be okay. And also we need to empower our new leaders to say no, or know how to opt out of, say, hey, I can't make this meeting. I will make next week's. Will that be okay with you?
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of set some boundaries. Have people set these boundaries early on. And yeah. So they have that time to develop, because it is, as the old analogy of drinking from a fire hose, it can be yeah. that way for a new leader. And so yeah. maybe making it a little bit more incremental, or a little bit more mindful on how we walk into this might be a little bit of a better path.
Yeah. Yeah. And even if I love that idea of saying no, and even if it's not no, you know, redirecting to a different time, one of the frameworks that really helped me is just kind of naming this as the idea of like the maker schedule versus the manager schedule, you know, and this idea that the maker schedule relies on, you know, big 2 or 3 hour blocks to be productive, you know, whereas the manager schedule is just a series of 15 to 30 minute blocks throughout the entire day. And what I remember early on in my career, because to your exact point, I would say yes to everything, but I would say yes to it blindly. And so I'd look at my calendar and maybe I only have 4 meetings, but they're all spaced like 30 to 60 minutes apart from one another. So 4 30 minute meetings end up like destroying the whole day. And so I love your idea of like empowering managers to kind of, whether it's say no or just suggest like, how about this time? So you can kind of like try to like drive your meetings into one part of the day. But ultimately it just comes down to knowing that you need to take control of this and that you can take control of this.
Absolutely. We need to support them in that, because some of the people who are creating these big meetings for them are, you know, highly elevated individuals in the organization. Mm-hmm. So it can be a little intimidating, and that, mm-hmm. oh, you don't want to suggest, well, can we do that tomorrow? You know, that's difficult. And, you know, I'm very aware of that. You're aware of that. And we need to ensure that these people that we're bringing up the ranks, that we can support them in that as well.
Yeah. And then I also really liked that second piece that you mentioned of having all the answers. I think this is huge. This was, you know, this resonates with me, I think, because we do this in the military a lot, where, you know, there's always this idea of the mythical leader, where I blame the media in that we have this idea in movies and stuff where the, you know, think back to, I don't know if anybody's seen The Hunt for Red October or read the book, The Hunt for Red October.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, right. Like Marco Ramius, when he was the Russian commander played by Sean Connery in the movie, when he's described in the book, he's the guy that was like first in his class, the academy, first person to take this boat out. Like leaders are defined as being the first, being the best, being the ones that know everything. And in the real world, that's just not the case. And that's a lot of reprogramming that has to happen with people, I think.
But interestingly, when they were the individual contributor, they did have all the answers. They were that go-to person.
Yes.
But the questions change, right? All of a sudden, these questions have more about, hey, I'm having a tough day with this project. What's your recommendation for it? And it's something you're not familiar with all of a sudden. It's on a different plane.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I love that. It's that whole concept of the questions changed. I love that. Have you had conversations? How do you help people realize that?
Well, usually I always take everything to a human performance improvement concept, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. because I try to explain it. Your new purpose is to support people. Right. It's not to be an autocratic leader or anything of that nature. We absolutely need to support our workers. So I like to introduce concepts of like the 6 boxes model, just because it's a nice, easy, conceptual way of seeing what people might need. It helps you as a new leader ask the right questions to dig deeper. Right. It's kind of like the coaching habit, always stay curious a little bit longer, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And so we do have to start asking more questions, dig deeper. And I like to give a framework on different avenues to approach it. And that's why I use that model, is because it's a little older and it's not necessarily widely used anymore, but
yeah,
it's easy enough to recognize those different aspects.
Not to put you on the spot, but I'm not sure. I know I've heard of it. I'm not super familiar with the six box model. What could you walk us through it?
Yeah, absolutely. So the six boxes model is just, it's basically looking at different aspects of what people could need to do a good job, right? Mm. And it's broken into these six different sections, per se. Mm-hmm. First one, mm-hmm, expectations and feedback, right? And anybody that's familiar with like situational leadership or some of these other leadership models, we know that, differing expectations or perceptions of expectations can cause an issue. Or if we're, mm-hmm, not delivering feedback in a timely manner, people aren't receiving it. So there's number one. That's easy. Well, those aren't easy concepts. Let me take that back. But it's easy to identify.
Sure. Yeah. The next box. It's simple, not easy.
There we go. The next box is tools and resources. Mm-hmm. Does everyone even have what they need to do the job correctly? Because this might not be a performance issue. It might be more of a, I need this software to perform this task. Great.
Yep.
The next one, rewards and consequences. So, what's in it for me? It kind of starts touching on motivators.
Yep.
Next, skills and knowledge. Do we know how to do the job correctly? What do we need to perform better? Next one's capacity. It's truly that selection of people. Is this the right person for this job? And yep, then next is the motives and preferences, that attitude factor. And,
yep,
if we don't have that, the motives to do it, if it's something I don't like to do, I don't have the motivation. I don't have the right attitude. Maybe I'm not the right person for this task. So I like that six boxes model because, yep, they're easy to recognize and it helps, mm-hmm, people put it in a framework on, okay, well, I need to look here. And like I said, it really drives those questions well.
Yeah, it's really simple. It's really practical. I also love it because as you walked through those, training is really only the direct answer to one of those boxes. And, you find that so often, just as people who are in learning and development, training is always the answer. It's like, oh, we need training. It's like, well, how about you walk through these six options, see which one of these is most relevant. I love that. That's great.
That's actually where I started using it, was in needs analysis.
I love it.
When I was doing more, yes, designing. And I love that you picked up on that. That is spectacular.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting when, because the audience of the show is kind of a mix of leaders and training folks, and there is that overlap. Like, I think all managers, all leaders need to be able to do, or it would be beneficial for them to be able to do some of those early needs analysis questions, of figuring out what, because ultimately they're trying to figure out what the blockers are, and so those kinds of tools can certainly help them a lot. So I think that's awesome. I know you're also, so those are some of the common frictions that you see when people are coming in. To the first point of that model, the first thing is expectations, understanding what the expectations of the role are. And I think a lot of times at a lot of organizations, managers struggle too, because there aren't clear expectations of what a manager is supposed to be, let alone what their people are supposed to be. But like, what am I, what are the competencies and skills that I'm expected to have? I think you're doing some work right now of kind of trying to define the role of a leader in an organization. When doing that, how do you get started? Because it can be such a big thing. How do you suggest, whether it's an organization or an individual, kind of get started at defining what are the key skills that I need to have as a leader?
So there's a couple different aspects to this. Don't reinvent the wheel, right? There's 100 competency models out there. Use them, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're going to put in a ton of effort, and ultimately it's going to pretty much fit like a puzzle piece in any one of these other competency models. Now, you can definitely just use them more as a reference. And I would highly recommend ensuring that the competency model you build is reflecting the values of the organization, the vision of the organization. So it truly speaks to the culture of the entire group and not just, well, I found this on the internet and it looked really cool. Because we all know how that goes over when we present that to a big group, right?
Exactly. And so often too, it's about, you know, to your point about matching the culture, sometimes that's just in the it's in the language that's used, and it might be saying the exact same thing, but just the words sound differently in different places. And so making sure it's connected to your culture is really important.
Yeah. And revisiting it, you know, anytime values change or a vision to the organization changes, we need to ensure that we're going back and making sure the competency model still fits to what our beliefs are as an organization, right?
So we're using a bunch of words here, you know, vision, values, mission, competency, I'll throw in skills as well. Regarding managers, what do you think some of those words mean? Like, what is a competency? Like, whether it's an example, or how do you think of a competency versus something like a skill, or how does a competency relate to, you know, the values of a company?
So I always try to explain a competency is actually a group of skills and behaviors that we use, right? So in communication, you can't necessarily go to a leader and say, I would like you to learn communication, because it's so broad, right? There's you know, just our body language alone can be its own like full day course.
Yes.
No longer. And so when we talk about communication, I do like to break it down into more skills based, like how do we communicate through email? How do we communicate during conflict? Right.
Yeah.
And so we have these different skills, and then we also have these behaviors that also work into it. With communication, your demeanor is so important. Are you a likable person? Right. Mm-hmm. Do you tend to be very positive and smile a lot? Mm. You know, so how do we really come together to make this competency of communication?
Mm. So then tell me if this sounds right to you as I'm hearing you kind of describe this, kind of what's coming together in my head is almost like you could break up. So you have a role as a manager, and you can break that up into, I almost want to say responsibilities, like you're responsible for communication or something like that. You know, like these big picture things that you're responsible for. And then you combine that with the values of the company. And what comes out the other side is the individual skills that someone, so this, the individual skills are what you need to learn in order to fulfill that competency for your particular culture.
Yeah. And I actually like to interweave the values into the descriptions on how the skills are used. Because, you know, our values are how we make decisions, how we carry ourselves within our organization, right? So I feel like these skills, when we say, you know, communication during conflict, you know, your values should be reflected in there. Say it's stability or something of that nature. We need to have that interwoven in there. So people can see our values in it. It almost has the why built into it. So why do I need this skill? Because it reflects this in our organization, in our culture, in who we are.
Yeah. Yeah, I know when I've heard other people talk about that too, it's almost like you want to get to phrases or descriptions that one, I always think you can use to make decisions, right? Like if you can't use this to make a decision, then it's not really useful. And then two, I think a good check with this two stuff, that this stuff that I've also heard from somewhere else, I can't remember if I first heard this, is would someone disagree with this? Like if you create phrases and descriptions that are so fluffy or broad that everyone would say, yeah, that sounds right. Well, then you haven't defined anything yet. because a culture can't be something for everyone, right? And so I don't know, I almost found that as an interesting exercise. It's like, can you imagine people disagreeing with this? And if so, then that's actually maybe a good thing.
Ooh, I actually really like that. I would be interested in hearing more on that, because that is true. Not all organizations' values are the same.
Yeah.
And so it should be a little bit different. While the skill is going to be universal, right? Still how it ties to the culture of the organization might be different. And that's excellent.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. One thing that comes to my mind as we're talking about this, though, is, as you said, you know, there's these buckets of skills that form these competencies that get things done. They can be kind of like infinitely granular. Do you have any techniques for making sure this whole thing doesn't get out of control? Right? Like, you know, how do we, I literally have seen skill matrices where I think at one company, now this was technical, this wasn't managers, but on the technical side, they were tracking like 5,500 discrete skills. And that just becomes impractical and useless in my mind. So even for this one role of a people manager, I don't know, how do you draw the cutoff of, okay, we have gone granular enough, or we have done enough?
Usually when you present it to somebody and their eyes glaze over because they're overwhelmed, that's too much, right? Just pull back, give up, start over.
I love that.
So I do like to break out competency models into leadership level, right? And it's not great. It's not that leaders need different skills per se. It's just senior leaders need more of a strategic high-level focus, whereas the frontline leader needs something a little bit more interpersonal. And also, they're newer to the role. They need new skills. Yeah. So I really do like to talk to the people in the organization and be like, what do you wish you would have known? What would have made your life 100 times easier in that first 6 months? And they, you know, usually you get a lot of similar responses. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some of them that, you know, some of the skills that, you know, might be pretty universal, and some that might not resonate across different teams at this point in time. But yeah, I do like to break it down that way. And does get too big, I don't know. Definitely reaching out and collaborating with other groups within the organization and being like, what can I cut out?
Yeah. It feels like something that could definitely benefit from like an 80-20 kind of rule at some point. Is you just, and I always think there's always, it's you always overproduce and then cut back. So it's like you just add lines, more skills. And then at some point you have to be like, okay, let's hold on here. Some of these can be combined. Some of these are really edge cases, you know? I think that's, there's no way to have the right answer from the beginning. Like it's like Dan Pink said, right? At ATD, we both saw Dan Pink speak and he said, you know, you have to act in order to understand. I think this is a great example.
Absolutely. And like you said, it's so granular. You can actually look at your training programs that you're going to be using for it too. If these 13 skills are going to be in this one single day program, well, find a way to make those 13 skills one skill, right?
Yeah. I think that's right. Yeah. Another similar action to this of how to kind of generate those skills. One thing that I remember hearing from, I think I first heard about this from EOS, the Entrepreneurial Operating System, was you get like executives or top leaders in a room and just ask them the question, who are the best managers in the company? And then, you know, this is a perfect like whiteboard, like, you know, sticky note exercise. You have everybody write those down. And then you ask why, you know, why are those the best? Why are they the best people? Why did they come to mind? And that can be another way to try to identify. I mean, one, it's going to be a great exercise to potentially identify some bias if you have those kinds of problems. But outside of that, it's a great way to identify the actions that people are taking, the skills that they have that are clearly the valued manager skills in the organization.
Absolutely. And you can actually do that on the flip side as well. And who are the worst managers? And identify the traits or behaviors that are also driving against the company culture or what you don't want to breed in the organization, right?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And probably, ooh, that's a tough one that I really, is really sticky. It's interesting. I'm thinking about how, you know, going back to unconscious bias, this idea of unconscious bias or just bias in general, very often in training that I've seen when we talk about terminating employees, and a manager comes up and says, I want to terminate somebody. And HR asks why. And they're like, oh, they're just not fitting or whatever. And that's a perfect time to be like, to really dig in. Just be like, no, you can't be broad. Like, what specifically aren't they doing? I hear that talked about all the time on the individual contributor front. I never hear that talked about on the manager front. And that would be a great discussion to have from a manager point of view. Because so often we do just say, they're not working out. They can't get their team something, whatever, productivity, teamwork, it's not working, but why? Like, that's such a great opportunity to, when there's a manager that we think that either we're struggling with, first of all, or if we've just terminated, what specifically wasn't happening that we want to happen in the future?
Yeah, and if we see that one behavior that we're like, we really wish all of these people did this.
Yeah.
Bam. Put that in the competency model, because that's obviously very important to the culture, very important to the people, right?
Yeah.
And I can't take credit for that. I honestly, that comes out of a Blanchard
really?
Training. Comparing the, you know, best and worst leaders. And it resonates, right? You get done with that and you're like, ooh, wow. And you start reflecting on yourself a little and going and writing down some things you'd like to change.
Yeah, that's awesome. I really like that. That juxtaposition there really kind of draws clarity there. And then I feel like, you know, so you're sitting in like a training development role. Do you imagine when you have this list of competencies, is that then shared? Like, should all managers see that? And now it's like something that they can utilize themselves. I don't know. What do you see the use of a competency list for managers?
Well, ultimately, I think it should be available to everybody in the organization, because I want every employee to know what skills would be, you know, expected of them if they became a frontline leader. Right. And I think to hold that back from anybody is almost not fair. So, yes, I think it should be available. I think it should come with an action planning template so they can self-identify what they think they need to work on. They can even work with, you know, their leader to be like, hey, I feel like I'm doing good in these three skills. I feel like I've improved. What do you think would be a good next step? And so that way it's not just it, because if we're just telling people, if it comes from HR or training and development, it feels arbitrary when we're like, well, this week we're going to work on, you know, persuasion, innovation, and you're like, where did that come from? So absolutely, it should be widely distributed. It should be talked about, right? It should be talked about more than once a year. Not just a performance review time or anything like that. It should be talked about often. So people have that opportunity to, you know, develop.
Yeah, I mean, framed correctly, it can be the baseline of any and every coaching conversation, you know, to just, you don't even need to provide anything else. It's just like, here's the definitions, here's what it is, go. Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. I will just say, I have seen organizations that worry about releasing specifically manager competencies to the whole company because they don't want to like have something that could be used against their managers by employees when employees see that their manager like isn't living up to expectations or something like that. I think that's crazy, but I've heard it discussed.
No, absolutely. I have heard the same things, and it's fair. Like, but it goes back to that, hey, we're not the expert in everything. Just because there's a competency model. I mean, talking about the organization you knew that had like 5,000 skills.
Yeah.
If their senior leaders have all 5,000 skills, I mean, wow. That's so impressive. Yeah, exactly. When do they have time to work?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it doesn't mean you have to have these. And if the organization has some skills that are absolutely required, okay, maybe that list should be not out in the open. I couldn't see an opportunity where that would come up. But at the same time, I do think a competency model, these are maybe desirable skills. Maybe it is a development plan. This is for you to become your best version of you. And we really shouldn't be judging other people. And that should be maybe part of a coaching conversation of itself. Of we shouldn't be judging all of our other leaders. We should be working on ourselves and just, you know, helping our teams be awesome.
Yeah, I think that's such a great way to kind of close this out of it really is just being honest with ourselves. And, you know, so much about getting better and improvement is just, like forget about what other people are doing, know what the expectations are, have an honest understanding of where you're at, and then make a deliberate effort to try to improve them. And that's ultimately what it comes down to. And when you're making that shift from individual contributor to the manager role, just realizing that you're kind of starting over again. It's a whole new skill set. It's a whole new thing that you're judged on, that you, a whole new bucket of things that you need to be able to do. And it's just going to take time. And that's just what it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Joel, thank you. This has been great. This has been awesome. I think this has been a really interesting discussion. I really love the beginning about some of those, you know, things that people need to work on. I think there's some great stuff in there of tactics that individual managers can use or anybody who's making that transition and seeing some struggles. And then at the end, we kind of talked a little bit bigger picture about, you know, kind of some of these strategies around planning and creating these competency models of what a leader should be. So this has been great. Thank you so much for joining us today. I can't believe a half hour has passed already. That was crazy.
Yeah, I really appreciate getting to talk to you again. We're going to have to connect again soon. I really enjoyed this.
Absolutely. This was great. Thank you so much, Joel.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to today's show. If you are looking for help turning your organization's great engineers into great managers, me and my team at Better Everyday Studios would love to help. We deliver targeted and interactive training workshops that are designed to help build the three fundamental skills of any new manager: building trust, giving feedback, and setting goals. Reach out to me through matt@bettereverydaystudios.com so we can start making your organization better every day.